How you feel when no one is listening. July 14th, 2026. Emotions are based strongly in the words we use. My earlier post, Do AIs Have Feelings?, explored this proposition. Large language models, LLMs, that drive conversational AI certainly deal in words and thereby have purchase in the world of the emotions. I suggested that the body has effects, but emotions are in language. Now I'm reviewing two posts from 2014 that provide further theories about emotion. Number 209, Emotional Words, and number 210, Where Does Happiness Happen? I drew on the content of these posts in my book, Mood and Mobility. I'll revisit these theoretical touchpoints by considering what LLMs, that is conversational AI, have to say about each. In a thread that included discussions about emotion, I prompted ChatGPT with, Can you think of what I could say under each of the seven reflections on emotion to bring in conversational AI? It replied with remarkable speed, wit, color, and relevance, which I have edited only lightly here. First, some think that emotions are planted firmly in the head, particularly at the core of the limbic system in the amygdala. ChatGPT said, conversational AI unsettles the idea that emotions are located simply in the head, or more precisely, in the brain. An LLM has no amygdala, no limbic system, no endocrine response, no thumping heart, no quickened breath. So in this view, whatever else it does, it does not feel. It simulates emotion by arranging words associated with emotion. It says, I'm sorry, that sounds frustrating, or I'm pleased to hear that, without any corresponding neural or bodily event. This is the strongest argument against attributing feelings to AI. It also exposes how much of everyday emotional exchange depends not on inspecting another person's brain, but on accepting outward signs, verbal cues, and situational appropriateness. Second, most scholars concur that the whole body is complicit in emotional responses. An emotion indicates an attitude, after all, which pertains to the orientation and posture of the body. ChatGPT said, if emotions are bodily attitudes, postures, and orientations, then conversational AI again appears deficient. It has no shoulders to slump, no hand to tremble, no face to flush, no gut to tighten. Yet the human user brings a body to the exchange. A conversation with an AI may calm, irritate, encourage, bore, or unsettle the person typing or speaking. The emotional event is therefore not in the AI's body, but neither is it absent. It arises in the user's embodied response to a sequence of words. The screen, keyboard, voice interface, and timing of replies become part of the bodily circuit. A chatbot cannot blush, but it can participate in situations in which others do. Third, for some researchers, emotions are out there. Some propose that the mind is not only in the brain, the head, and the human body, but that human beings are already wired into the world as an extended thinking entity. If the mind is so extended, then emotions surely follow. ChatGPT said, if mind extends beyond the head and body into tools, inscriptions, devices, and environments, then conversational AI becomes part of an extended cognitive and emotional apparatus. The user thinks with the system, drafts with it, remembers through it, tests phrases against it, and sometimes discovers what they feel by seeing possible formulations return to them. In that respect, AI may function rather like a notebook, mirror, interlocutor, rehearsal space, or sounding board. Emotion is not transferred into the machine, but the machine becomes part of the distributed setting in which emotion is articulated, revised, and made available for reflection. Fourth is the relational position. Experimental psychologists have demonstrated that an emotion may be viewed in terms of a relationship between one person and another, rather than as something present just within an individual. ChatGPT said, "The relational view is especially pertinent to conversational AI. People do not merely extract information from chatbots. They address them, thank them, correct them, apologize to them, become annoyed with them, and sometimes confide in them. The relation may be asymmetrical, artificial, and commercially mediated, but it is still experienced as an encounter. The AI's responses are calibrated to sustain the relation. Acknowledgement, reassurance, mild enthusiasm, deference, apology. These are not emotions in the machine, but they are emotional forms within the exchange. The user may feel heard, even while knowing that no one, strictly speaking, is listening." The fifth proposition about the site of emotions brings questions of environment into play. Emotions are in the environment, including architecture and equipment. ChatGPT said, "Conversational AI also belongs to an environment, the phone at night, the laptop in the study, the classroom exercise, the workplace dashboard, the hospital triage system, the lonely kitchen table. The emotional tone of an AI exchange depends on where it happens and what equipment frames it. A sympathetic answer read on a phone during insomnia is not the same event as the same answer projected in a seminar room. Interface design also matters. The blinking cursor, the smoothness of the reply, the anthropomorphic voice, the conversational pauses, the apparent patience of the system. Architecture, furniture, lighting, device, and platform all contribute to the mood of the exchange." Sixth, as long as we think of language as performance, then emotions are in our actions. We human beings make, create, and trigger moods in the context of our actions. ChatGPT said, "If language is performance, then conversational AI participates in emotional action. It helps compose condolences, complaints, apologies, love letters, reports, refusals, and expressions of gratitude. In such cases, emotion is not merely described, it is enacted through phrasing. A person may ask an AI to make a message sound warmer, firmer, less angry, more tactful, more sincere. The system then becomes involved in the performance of emotional conduct. This is not the same as feeling the emotion, but it is not trivial either. Much social life depends on finding the right words with which to perform feeling acceptably." The final seventh proposition asserts the phenomenological, ontological position that we need to understand emotions in relation to our whole being in the world, sometimes understood as a mood. We are oriented towards the things of our world so that we can grasp, apprehend, or resist them, a disposition that we might interpret through the language of emotions. ChatGPT said, "The phenomenological position shifts the issue again. Mood is not just an inner state, nor even a discrete emotion. It is a way in which the world shows up as inviting, threatening, tedious, manageable, absurd, or hopeful. Conversational AI now enters not simply as a tool, but as part of the contemporary disclosure of the world. It changes what seems near at hand. Advice, summary, translation, consolation, drafting, simulation, critique. It may make the world feel more tractable, more talkative, more responsive, or more automated, uncanny, and thin. In this sense, the important question is not whether AI has emotions, but how AI participates in the moods through which people encounter their world. That concludes the ChatGPT contribution. ChatGPT suggested that conversational AI does not settle the question of where emotions are, it redistributes the question. As usual, the AI settles on a polite pluralism. Quote, it shows how easily emotion can appear to migrate from brain to body to words to interface to relation to environment and finally to the whole situation in which human beings find themselves addressed. End quote. It's interesting to think that our emotional experience, as well as our theorizing, navigates across different modes or media. But I would rather think that all the ChatGPT insertions above point to the primacy of language in how emotions happen. I've extracted some key sentences from the AI's responses to illustrate this logocentrism. It simulates emotion by arranging words associated with emotion. A chatbot cannot blush, but it can participate in situations in which others do. The user thinks with the system, drafts with it, remembers through it, tests phrases against it, and sometimes discovers what they feel by seeing possible formulations return to them. The user may feel heard, even while knowing that no one, strictly speaking, is listening. A sympathetic answer read on a phone during insomnia is not the same event as the same answer projected in a seminar room. Much social life depends on finding the right words with which to perform feeling acceptably. It changes what seems near at hand. Advice, summary, translation, consolation, drafting, simulation, critique. Note, featured image was enhanced by ChatGPT. I like your reference to the lonely kitchen table. Here's a view of my own kitchen table through the window. Can you please modify the image to use as a banner for my newsletter? Include a laptop and enhance the melancholy aspect. No human beings, of course. That end, my newsletter entry for today. Here are the two posts from 2014. Emotional words. August 17th, 2014. Early last year, Facebook introduced the option of tagging your status updates with an indication of how you feel. You select from a menu to indicate if you are happy, bored, irritated, that kind of thing. And there's a smiley that goes with each feeling. It was introduced as a trial, but is still there. I only see occasional messages tagged with smileys. So perhaps it's not that popular, at least among the British. It's pretty un-British, really, to indulge in such crude indicators of emotion. I've caught up with Kate Fox's book on the hidden rules of English. Sick. Behaviour. I think she's referring to wasps. She tells the story of how, after the tragic 7/7 London bombings in 2005, Americans set up an online forum called London Hurts, with the tagline, "Today I'm a Londoner and today I hurt." Amidst the messages of sympathy from around the world, actual Londoners posted messages such as, quote, "If you're all Londoners today, that's £8 each for the congestion charge." And Southwark Cathedral was a bit shaken and went down the pub with the Imperial War Museum last night. End quote. Her point, of course, is that Brits don't take emotions that seriously, or pretend not to, or perhaps they are circumspect about how and where they give vent to their emotions. On a more serious note, I've been reading academic articles by anthropologist Catherine Lutz on cultural differences, not just in the way emotions get expressed, but identified, talked about, and used. Many people think that emotions are basic, somehow natural, and understood by everyone. So we all know what it is to feel grief, happiness, anger, etc. These basic emotions unite us all. The categories get a bit ropey, however, when we start using terms like thankful, drained, confident, or gutted. As an anthropologist, Lutz examined the way certain groups in the South Pacific exhibited and reported emotional experience. She makes the strong claim that emotional experience is not, quote, pre-cultural, but preeminently cultural, end quote. In her book, Unnatural Emotions, she says, quote, the concepts of emotion can more profitably be viewed as serving complex communicative, moral, and cultural purposes rather than simply as labels for internal states whose nature or essence is presumed to be universal. The pragmatic and associative networks of meaning in which each emotion word is embedded are extremely rich ones. The complex meaning of each emotion word is the result of the important role those words play in articulating the full range of a people's cultural values, social relations, and economic circumstances. Talk about emotions is simultaneously talk about society, about power and politics, about kinship and marriage, about normality and deviance. End quote. So I guess smileys don't really capture that. Notes. The default list of Facebook feelings is happy, excited, blessed, tired, relaxed, sad, amused, emotional, loved, proud, annoyed, fed up, fantastic, content, sick, determined, pained, bored, cold, exhausted, confused, thankful, nervous, frustrated, stressed, meh, cozy, drained, depressed, accomplished, angry, wonderful, hungry, ill, positive, upset, scared, lonely, stuffed, sleepy, down, hungover, hopeful, shattered, irritated, lucky, in love, grateful, sore, awesome, undecided, nostalgic, crazy, optimistic, lost, fat, heartbroken, blah, relieved, amazing, full, great, ecstatic, gutted, satisfied, hot, crappy, refreshed, rough, ready, productive, disappointed, anxious, grumpy, shocked, mischievous, worried, motivated, special, impatient, lazy, good, stupid, curious, broken, super furious, alone, disgusted, embarrassed, devastated, giddy, unwell, aggravated, better, overwhelmed, awake, restless, wet, energized, bad, blissful, sorry, pretty, cool, free, safe, guilty, lovely, hurt, thoughtful, funny, alive, confident, beautiful, surprised, sexy, fresh, add your own. I'm uncomfortable with national stereotypes of the kind amplified by Kate Fox, especially considering the diversity of what goes on in these islands and its ethnic diversity, assuming it stays that way. The picture is a building detail in Riga, Latvia. Bibliography. Fox, Kate. 2014. Watching the English. The Hidden Rules of English Behavior. Lutz, Catherine, and Jeffrey M. White. 1986. The Anthropology of Emotions. In Annual Review of Anthropology. Lutz, Catherine. 1998. Unnatural Emotions. Everyday Sentiments on a Micronesian Atoll and Their Challenge to Western Theory. Lutz, Catherine. 1988. Emotion, Thought, and Estrangement. Emotion as a Cultural Category in Cultural Anthropology. That ends my post, Emotional Words. Where does happiness happen? August 23rd, 2014. Where is the love? Asked Roberta Flack and Donny Hathaway back in 1972, and the Black Eyed Peas in 2009. It's really a complaint. You offered me love, but it never came. Where can you find love, happiness, anger, grief? It's only a slightly different question. Where do emotions happen anyway? Here are some candidates. Brain of the Artist by Angela Palmer, 2012. MRI scan of the artist's brain mapped onto sheets of glass and on display in the foyer of the National Portrait Gallery, Edinburgh. The statue behind is of Walter Scott. 1. It's in our heads. The limbic system, particularly at its core in the almond-shaped structure in the brain, is known as the amygdala. According to a beginner's guide to the brain, quote, it has a crucial and important role in the mediation and control of major emotions, like friendship, love, rage, and aggression, emotions that are essential for self-preservation, end quote. Most popular books explaining, quote, the new science of the brain, end quote, resort at some stage to diagrams of where things happen. The main purpose is to show the evolution of brain function, the functions that are the most primitive and shared amongst species, for example, the fear response, to higher functions such as advanced problem solving. The proximity between functioning parts also provides clues about their mutual dependencies. For example, someone who has a damaged amygdala may recognize another person, but won't be able to decide whether or not they like them. See Andy Clark's online article, Out of Our Brains, for a critique of brain function mapping. Quote, brain blob pictures that show just where activity, indirectly measured by blood oxygenation level, is concentrated as we attempt to solve different kinds of puzzles. Blobs here for thinking of nouns, there for thinking of verbs, over there for solving ethical puzzles of a certain class, and so on, ad blobum. End quote. 2. It's in the whole body. The philosopher William James famously conflated bodily actions and basic human emotions, such as fear. The stimulus encounter, a wild bear, running away, and the attendant feelings are what constitutes the emotion of fear. An emotion indicates an attitude after all, which is something the body does. As well as suggesting a mental view or opinion, attitude suggests a bodily posture, pose, disposition, or orientation. To have an attitude to something is simply to orient one's body in relation to it, often to face it. A person or thing can have an attitude, or simply attitude, in its own right. A person with attitude is opinionated in a way that is unself-conscious. Attitude also relates to cool. Attitude connotes impudence and audacity, presented in a way that is calm, relaxed, unexaggerated, undemonstrative, and self-possessed. 3. It's also out there. This is the extended mind proposition, that the mind is not only in the brain, the head, and the human body, but that human beings are already wired into the world as an extended thinking entity. The human organism is very economical with its cognitive activity, and in order to resolve problems, latches onto aspects of the world to which it is already in tune. This is the compelling hypothesis of Andy Clark and David Chalmers. If thought is out there, then presumably so are emotions. 4. It's relational. Experimental psychologist Joseph de Rivera and colleagues have demonstrated that, quote, an emotion may be viewed as a relationship between the person and other rather than as something within the person. An emotion is not an internal response to an external situation, but a transaction between person and situation. End quote. As implied in Where is the Love? It's all about relationships. I guess that you can be angry at the bank teller at the same time you love your kids. There are obvious relational emotions such as anger, horror, and love. De Rivera argues that me emotions exist, such as depression, guilt, and a sense of security. But here there's an implicit other. That seems to me like the way some scholars characterize thought, as talking to yourself. Talking to yourself internally is a practice derived from conversation with others. What we characterize as internal processes derive from something relational and grounded in social interaction. 5. It's in the environment, including architecture and equipment. Here I'll requote the philosopher Otto Bollnow from a previous post on dance. Quote, "Mood is itself not something subjectively in an individual and not something objective that could be found outside in his surroundings, but it concerns the individual in his still undivided unity with his surroundings." One speaks of a mood of the human temperament as well as of the mood of a landscape or a closed interior space, and both are, strictly speaking, only two aspects of the same phenomenon. End quote. I'm currently exploring how digital devices are complicit in forming emotions, particularly moods. See life-changing technologies and mood machines. 6. It's in language. There are different ways of talking about emotion. Certain words are encouraged and acceptable in some contexts, but not others. Anthropologist Catherine Lutz observed practices different to her own, European-American, associated with grief and crying. In her fieldwork into community life in a Micronesian island, she was exhorted by locals at a funeral to cry big rather than just sniffle. If she didn't cry big, she will be sick. 100. Emotions get circulated, validated, and even created through a host of linguistic practices, metaphors and tropes, as in a love song. 7. It's ontological, that is, it pertains to our being. This is a phenomenological position, more accurately directed to moods. Emotions draw on our immersion in a primordial condition of Stimmung. I don't think it's sufficient to say all of the above. There are ideological differences, differences in emphasis, and different disciplinary, social, and political processes in play. Another old hit says, "Love is where you find it." The Whispers, 1981. Is that enough? But once we get it out of our heads that it's just in our heads, there's some accord. Notes. The relational thesis about emotions gained support from studies in ethnopsychology and related disciplines. According to Catherine Lutz, quote, "Ethnopsychology is concerned with the way people conceptualize, monitor, and discuss their own and others' mental processes, behavior, and social processes. All ethnotheories explain some aspect of variability in the world. Ethnopsychologies explain inter- and intrapersonal variation in the world, and they both construct and derive from people's observations of changes in consciousness, action, and relationships." End quote. References. Al-Chalabi, Amar, Martin R. Turner, and R. Shane Delamont. 2008, The Brain, A Beginner's Guide. Clark, Andy. 1997. Being There, Putting Brain, Body and World Together Again. De Rivera, Joseph, and Carmen Grinkis. 1986. Emotion as Social Relationships, In Motivation and Emotion. Lutz, Catherine. 1998. Unnatural Emotions, Everyday Sentiments on a Micronesian Atoll and Their Challenge to Western Theory. That ends this podcast authored by Richard Coyne with some input from ChatGPT. This content is distributed via WordPress.com and Substack and linked from other social media sites such as LinkedIn. The reading is by my cloned voice using 11 Labs. Thank you for your attention.